it this way. You do not persecute somebody unless you are scared from the truth that they carry. Are you with me this morning, or you need more coffee? Because I need people responding back. Listen, I'm a brown guy. I'm not politically correct. Just FYI. So I would be yelling at you. I would be screaming at you. All of this stuff. I don't care, man. Just FYI. They do not persecute us. They persecute Christ in us. Let me put it by other way. I live downtown Toronto. Jehovah's Witness used to come knocking on my door every Saturday. They used to. I don't know why they stopped. I'm a very nice guy. Every Saturday, I opened the door. I didn't yell at them. I didn't scream at them. I didn't, you know, insult them in any way. It's the opposite. I always smiled in their face. I told them, come in. Let's have a cup of coffee together. Of course, once they come in, I lock the door. They can't leave. But that's a different story. I have 4 Jehovah's Witnesses in the closet. I don't know what to do with them. That's an Egyptian joke. You don't have to call 911 yet. I'm not scared of darkness because I have the light. And I'm not scared of how hard is the storm because I will always stand strong in the midst of it. But you don't persecute somebody unless you are scared from the truth that they carry. So as a Muslim young man, I start to wonder, okay? As a Muslim young man, I start to wonder why there is persecution happening to the Christians in Egypt. So I went to my best friend. My best friend, his name is Tamer. Tamer was a Christian. I was a Muslim. I told him, Tamer, I don't understand why there is persecution happening to the Christian minorities in Egypt. I just don't understand. Now, we have to understand the relationship between me and Tamer. Me and Tamer was like brothers. So we born in the same hospital. We went to the same hour. We went to the same school, went to the same university. So we always was together. But we never spoke about religion, really. So I went back to my friend Tamer. I told him, Tamer, I don't know why your community is facing persecution. I need to understand that. And he said, Majid, I cannot answer your question because I'm afraid that my answer will affect our relationship together. This not working?
Let's try this.
Okay. What did I say about Egyptians and technology? Okay, I don't know how we'll do that. Okay.
We do a dance. We just got to know each other.
Thank
really
you. Well. Absolutely. It's only when you're a brown guy that's happened to you. Now, sorry, I just in the next... Well, if this didn't work, I don't know what
to do. If you stay back on the stage...
Okay, here is the problem. That I am ADD. So it will be very hard for me to sit just in one place, just FYI. So I will be moving. So sorry about that. And I move my hand because I'm Egyptian, so if you hear that, you just know. Okay. That's not right. This will be fine. So I went to my best friend Tamer, and Tamer said, listen, if you want to know the answers for every question you have, I will give you a book. Read this book and search the truth in your own, and you found the answers that you seek. Now, this book was not only about rules and regulations, and it was also about justice and forgiveness and sacrifice. We call it the Holy Bible. Now, I didn't know anything about the Holy Bible. I opened the Holy Bible for the first time. I didn't know any difference between Old and New Testament. I just opened it. And the first verse was John 8. And in John 8, they brought a lady commit adultery, throw her in front of the Lord. I told him, listen, if you are really son of God, judge her according to the law of Moses. It's okay, baby's crying. It's not North American people. If somebody went to the washroom, they keep looking at them. Baby's crying. Just we all did it when we were little babies. I promise you that. Seriously, when we go to the washroom, everybody looking. And when we come back, everybody looking. They went to the washroom. Like it's Let it go. You know. First time I opened the Holy Bible was John 8. And in John 8, they brought a lady commit adultery, throw her in front of the Lord, told him, if you are really son of God, judge her according to the law of Moses. Now, according to the law of Moses, this lady, she deserved to be stoned to death. But the Lord looked back, the Lord sat right down in the sand by his finger. They repeated the question again. The Lord looked at all of them, told them, who without sin cast her the first stone? Now, if you think about it for 1 minute, the only one who can really cast her the first stone is Christ himself, because he's the only one who have no sin. But he didn't. He looked back at this lady and he told her, go, sin no more, I forgive you. And this was my first time I met Christ. I start to read the Bible, I start to compare between the Bible and the Quran, which is the book of the Muslims. Almost after 9-10 months, I went back to my friend Tamer. And I told him, Tamer, now I know what is Christianity. Now I know what is Christianity. You have to understand that Christianity is not that you go to the church every Sunday, hallelujah, bless the Lord, and see your Lord next Sunday. That's a club. That's not Christianity. Christianity is not a religion. It's a relationship with God. And that's Christianity. I told him, Tamer, now I know who's Jesus. He's not just Almighty Lord. He's flower in the middle of the desert, almighty light in the middle of the darkness, and warm hug in the middle of cold night. And that's Christ to me. I told him, Tamer, I want to accept Jesus, my Lord and my Savior. Tamer jumped from his chair and he said, hallelujah, bless the Lord, and all of this stuff. I told him, sit down, don't hallelujah me, just come down. He said, what do you have in mind? I told him, the Bible said faith without action is a dead faith. What I mean by that we have to do something to help the persecuted Christians back home in Egypt. We started underground organization. We started with 7 members in the underground organization. In 2 years' time, we become 24,000. 40% of us was Muslims came to the Lord. In this 2 years, we built two churches inside caves inside mountains, 1 Bible school, 1 medical clinic. We established a newspaper asking from the Egyptian government to give us our rights as a believers. And here's the part that will be very hard for me to talk about. I start to write a book about the difference between Islam and Christianity, publish it in Egypt. That's when you become more known to the authority. And in August 15, 1998, 1:30 in the morning, somebody came knocking at my door. I was in my office in Al-Haram Street, downtown Cairo. And at 1:30 in the morning, somebody came and knocked on my door. 1:30 in the morning, it's very weird timing, so I went, I opened the door. Somebody asked for a name. I told him, nobody here by this name. After I closed the door, 3 minutes later, 5 soldiers, 2 officers, they came, they broke the door, and they arrested me from my office. They took me to a police station, it's called the Zoghli Police Station, it's behind the Egyptian Parliament. And the officer there started to interrogate me, and he said, "We know who you are. We know everything about you. We know about the organization that you built. We know about the book that you wrote. We know everything about you. One thing we don't know, who's the rest of your team? Who's the rest of your group? Who's your friends and your helpers?" I told him, I don't know which team and which group. And if you know everything about me, why are you asking me? He said, listen, you want to play tough? We can play tough together. I told him, tough is my middle name. You don't need to worry about it. You just have to do what you have to do. Next day, they transferred me to Abu Zabal prison. Now, for the people in the Middle East, they know what is Abu Zabal prison. They have a nickname for this prison. It's called Hell on Earth. Now, 25% from the space of this prison, like the 25% of the area itself or the prison, is underground. We call it the torture section. So it's like underground, like basements or graves. I don't know what you call them. This will be the torture section. That's where they will torture people. Now they have a system for the torture. The officer that they are torturing you, they always wearing a mask, so you cannot see their faces. And they always call each other by numbers, not by names. And every day they take you to higher level of torture. If you didn't speak in day number one, day number two is a higher level of torture. So they keep increasing the level. The torture will be for 3 hours. And after that, they give you rest between for 15, 20 minutes. And after that, they carry on another 3-4 hours, rest 15, 20 minutes until the end of the day. There is always a military doctor standing behind you. This military doctor, his mission not to stop your pain or to heal your wounds. His mission to make sure that you are conscious to the pain, which is mean that under heavy torture, if you lost your consciousness, he tried to wake you up. That's what they do. I was in this prison for 7 days. For me, it was like 700 years. Day number one, they shaved the hair of my head. And they tied my hand behind my back, and they have 2 big water containers. One is a very cold water, one is a very hot water. Now, the cold water, you know, is cold because it's full of ice, so you can see the ice on the top of it. And the hot water is very hot, and you know, because you can see the steam coming out of it. And what they did, they shaved the hair of my head, they will hold you from your neck, and they will dip your head for 1 minute in a very cold water, and after that they will dip it back in the hot water. So they will go back and forth between the cold and hot water. Try to do this in your hand, this will kill you. Now, how we can breathe is when they exchange your head from the cold to the hot, you can breathe in the middle, you can just take a quick breath, but you really can't breathe properly. They took me back again. This will happen for 3-4 hours, rest between 15, 20 minutes, and after that, carry on. They put me back again to my cell, and they told me, you tell us the name of your friends. I told them, I don't know what friends you are talking about. And to be honest with you, I didn't take shower for a long time, and I enjoy the cold and hot water. And to be honest with you, I'm very handsome without hair. I was, really. You can see I kept the style a little bit. Maybe not like my brother there, but almost. When you are facing your enemy, never ever show them your pain or your fear. Never ever. Next day, day number 2, they hang me upside down in a 90-degree position, which is mean that your upper part is on the floor, the lower part is hanging. They burn me with cigarettes, they beat me with everything in their hands. They will, like the big toe in my right leg, they will grab it like... The only thing I can really remember in day number 2 was the taste and the smell of my blood. That's how severe it was. I remember that I couldn't move, so they carried me and like on the floor, like they will grab me on the floor and back again to my cell, and I can remember the traces of my blood behind me. And they threw me back again to my cell, and they told me, do you know if you didn't speak today, what will be your torture tomorrow? So every day they will tell you what will be your torture next day, so all night long you're sitting down thinking about it. They told me we're ready 3 dogs to attack you. And these are not the dogs that you have at home. These are dogs that normally would be Doberman or German Shepherd. And they will release them to attack flesh, to attack human being. And they close the door. They told me, next day you will face the 3 dogs. And they close the door. What would you do if you are in my place? You are underground, you are in pain, you are hurting, you are bleeding from everywhere. And next day you know that you will be facing 3 dogs to attack you. What do you do if you are in my place? You start to pray. That's what you do. And that was my prayer. I told him, Lord, I want to thank you for your gift on the cross. I want to thank you that you died for our pain and our sin and our disease. And I want to thank you that you rose again to give us the way and the truth and the life. I have no regret in believing in you. And I have no regret in believing in you again if I have a second chance or a second life. I told him, but you know how weak I am. I'm made of flesh. I'm made of blood. And I'm afraid under heavy torture, I will mention the name of my friends. I will speak of their names. And this will be betraying to them. And this will kill hundreds of people. So I told him, Lord, my only request that you will take me home before tomorrow morning. That's my only request. I don't have any other request, from ash to ash, from dust to dust. Next day I woke up. Sorry, I'm moving. So I don't know if the microphone will survive this move or not. Next day, I woke up. My room is a dark room, is a dark cell. When they open the door, there is a red light in the corridor. So whatever, when you open the door, the red light in your room. And whatever in the red light, you can see the shadow of it in your room. So they open the door, and I can hear another door in the end of the corridor opened, and I can see a shadow of three big dogs coming closer to my room. And the dogs is coming closer and closer and closer. Now, it's not only the shadow, is the hearing. I don't know if I make sense to you. You know when you have three big dogs, the chain around their neck, the way that they breathe, coming closer, I can hear their noise, their voice. And they are coming closer and closer and closer into my room. I went and I sit down in the corner. So I put my back, so I need you to imagine that. So this is a corner. I went and I put my back in a corner. And I sit down in a way that my knees is covering my chest. You know this position when you sit down that your knees covering your chest. And my hand covering my face. Why did I do that? To cover as much as damage when the dogs attack. Now they don't teach you that in the school. It's just your own survivor mechanism that God already put it inside of you. So I went and I sit down. I put my back between the two walls. I sit down and I put my knees on my chest and my face covered by my hand. So when the dogs attack, can hurt the outside flesh, not the inner flesh. You know that the wounds is deep or not from the color of the blood. If the blood is much darker, that means the wound is deeper. So I sit down and I put in this position and I expected and I can hear the dogs getting closer and closer and closer and closer to me. And I prepared myself for pain. I prepared myself for agony. I know it's coming. There is no way around it. And I covered my face with my own hand and I can hear the dogs in my room and I can smell them. But I waited for pain, I waited for agony, I couldn't feel any hurt. So I start to remove my hand little by little away from my face just to see what's going on. And that's what I saw. The three dogs sitting around me, none of them moved one single step. The officers and the soldiers took the belt out and they start to beat the dog very hard to attack. The dogs didn't move. 1 inch. The officer told the soldier, maybe something wrong with these three dogs, maybe they are sick. Get me another set of three dogs. They went and they got another set with three dogs with one little different. The middle one took a step forward and he licked my face. Now, in our work in One Free World International, we usually deal more with the secular world than with our Christian world. So one time I was testifying in the Canadian Parliament or the American Congress, I can't remember. And one of the MPs or one of the congressmen came and said, what's your logical explanation for the dogs didn't attack you? See, when you are not a believer, you are looking for logic. Because the miracles have no concept in your life. You don't understand what this miracle is. So this man came and he said, what's your logical explanation for dogs didn't attack you? And he's looking for logical, and that's fair. That's genuine. I told him, you're looking for logic. Here is my logic. Here is what I know. These dogs been trained to listen to their master, but there is no higher master than Jesus Christ. And that's your logical answer. The officers took the three dogs. They didn't understand what's happened, and they took the three dogs. They closed the door. I didn't hear from them the rest of the day. Now, they got the same message that I got, that maybe I'm alone, but I'm not lonely. Day number four, officer number 27, big, strong man, he entered the room very angry, very upset. And he said, and he was a strong, big guy. Like this guy that used to be the governor of California, what's his name? Arnold Schwarzenegger thingy or whatever. And I never watched any of his movies until I came here to North America 13 years ago. Seriously, why in every movie he say, I will be back? Who cares? Do you actually care? Like, seriously, do you actually care? Because I don't care. As long as you're paying your own way, I don't care. Really. So he came, he entered the room very angry, very upset. He said, hey, listen, I'm not scared of you. I told him, of course you're not scared of me. I'm the one supposed to be scared of you. You are the one that's torturing me. He said, I'm here to make with you a deal, an agreement. I'm listening. He said, you tell me the name of your friends. I will release you from prison. No more torture. You want money? I give you money. You want brand new car? I give you brand new car. You want bigger house? I will give you bigger house. You want beautiful girls? I'll give you beautiful girls. Whatever you want, I will give it to you. Wow, that's an offer. I told him, I will take it. I like your offer, I will take it. But first, before I tell you all the names of my friends, you've been torturing me for the last 3 days. Even if I want to give you the information, I don't have the strength to give it to you. Go get me dinner, and after that, we'll talk after. He said, whatever you like, I will bring it to you. I told him, Egyptian shish kebab. Did you try the Egyptian shish kebab before? It's better than McDonald's. Well, everything is better than McDonald's. That's not the point, but... seriously, McDonald's is just... I don't know how people they can eat this crap. Sorry. Did I say that out loud in the church? Sorry about that. There is a reason why I'm not a pastor. He went, he bring me the best shish kebab. I sat down, I ate. He told me, now you tell me the name of your friends. I told him, cup of tea first, and after that we'll talk. Man, come on now. Like, he went, he bring the best cup of tea. I sat down, I drink it. He told me, now you tell me the name of your friends. I told him, listen, I have a dilemma, I have a problem. You see, all my friends, you know, is a big numbers. I cannot remember all their names. But I can give you the name of our leader. You can catch him, and he will remember all their names. He said, the leader? I thought that you are the leader of the organization. I told him, no, I'm just a servant. I'm not a leader. He said, tell me the name of your leader. I told him the name of our leader, Jesus Christ. If you can catch him, catch him. He wasn't really very happy like you. He didn't love it. Officer number 27, he punished me two punishments. The first punishment that he slapped my face. And he was a strong, big man. And like his hand was really very strong that to the limit that I was in the middle of the interrogation room. I hit the wall. That's how strong his arm is. I always make joke about it, though. I always say that it was my first time I fly without aeroplane. It's brand new meaning for free air miles. Many people will wonder, how come I make fun at it? How come I'm sitting down joking about it? Allow me to explain. See, officer number 27, when he slapped my face, he thought that I would spend the rest of my life in shame, in pain. Unable to talk about it, broken pieces. He didn't know that 11 years later I would be standing here in Kitchener in this church making joke about it. What officer number 27 didn't know, that they can always hurt our body, but no one can touch our spirit. That's what they didn't know. Can I tell you a secret about Christians? Can I tell you a secret about persecuted Christians? Christians like a bag of tea. You don't know how strong they are until you throw them in hot water. We are like nails. The harder they hit us, the deeper that we go. That's Christians. Second punishment, officer number 27, he took me to another dark room, and this dark room was a piece of wood in cross shape. They took off my clothes, they crucified me for 2 days and a half. When I say crucify me, they didn't nail me, but they tied your hand, your waist, your arm, your neck. Especially the neck one is very tight that if you try to sleep, it will choke you. So you have to remain up, and your neck have to stay to be straight. In the end of the 2 days and a half, they came and they asked me if I would say the name of my friends. I said no. That's when they brought an Egyptian knife, and they made a cut in the back of my left shoulder to the bones, and they put salt and lemon on the open wounds. That's why until now, even in my food or my drinking, I don't like to smell or taste lemon. I can't handle the smell of lemon. Mercy from God, when you are under heavy pain and under heavy torture, you lose your consciousness because your nerve system collapses. I lost my consciousness. I woke up, I found myself in a Laguza hospital. It's a police hospital in Cairo. For 3 months, I couldn't move. Simply, my body couldn't move even a muscle. The only thing that was moving was really my eyes. After the 3 months, the Egyptian police put me in house arrest. So they wrote a report that I'm mentally ill, which they do this very often when you are activist. Because if they killed you immediately, they will make out of you a hero or a martyr. So what they do, they destroy your reputation first. So they called me mentally ill. They put me in my house arrest for 8 months. After the 8 months, they took me to court martial. It's called court martial or martial court? Martial court? Court martial. And you don't have a lawyer. It's not a real court. It's a general that basically reading a piece of paper. Like, it's not a real court. It's a fake court. And the Egyptian police charged me with 3 charges. Number one, that I tried to make revolution against the Egyptian government. Number two, that I converted, I tried to change the official religion of Egypt from Islam to Christianity. Number three, believe it or not, that I love and I worship Christ. And I would tell you what I told the judge in this day. I told him, if loving Christ is a crime, if loving Christ is wrong, I don't want to be right anymore. And if loving him is a crime, I'm guilty as charged, Your Honor. This was my response. I received the death penalty, and in 4 days, the death penalty have to be taking place back again in Abu Zabal prison by hanging. They put me back again in my house arrest, and in 4 days, they're supposed to transfer me back to my prison where the hanging or the death penalty will take place. Now, in the night, few hours before the transportation take place, my team, the organization that I raised back in Egypt, they came, they attacked the house where I were. Now, the house is protected by 5 soldiers, 2 inside, 2 outside, and 1 on the roof. So my team, they came and they attacked the house and they attacked the Egyptian soldiers, and I was able to free. Nobody was killed in the operation. 2 of the Egyptian soldiers was hurt. But they will survive, don't worry about them. I was able to escape from Cairo to Alexandria. In Alexandria, I hide behind a police station. It's called an Anfushi police station. Why behind a police station? Because this is the last place that the police will try to find you. It's behind their building. True story. During this time, the Egyptian police started to put my pictures and my name in every newspaper and every TV, and they made a prize, reward. I think my first reward was £500,000 Egyptian pound. I don't know how much it is now. £500,000 Egyptian pound is like 100,000 American dollars. I don't know how much it is now, because every year if they didn't catch you, it goes higher. I don't know how much it is right now. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't tell you because I don't trust some of you. We're in recession and some of you want to get new car. You're not getting it this way, man. Get your own car another way. My friends told me you cannot stay in the country anymore. You have to leave. Now, how you leave? If you know the map of the Middle East very well, Egypt's surrounded by Arab Muslim countries, such as Libya, Saudi Arabia, Sudan. You go to any of these countries, they will exactly kill you in the same way. The only country neighboring to Egypt that is not Arab and not Muslim country is Israel. What did I know about Israel or the Jewish people at the time? I knew that the enemy of my enemy is my logic. I escaped from Alexandria to Sinai. If you know, Sinai is a desert. And in Sinai, I hide with a Bedouin family. Bedouin is the people of the desert. I hide deep in the desert for 2 months and a half. During this time, I start to monitor the border between the Egyptians and the Israelis, between Taba and Eilat. Now, if you know the map very well, there is two ways to escape from Taba to Eilat, through the mountain, but the mountain is very hard and there is a lot of security points, and through the Red Sea. Now, you have two problems to cross the Red Sea. Number one, you are not Moses, you have no stick. And trust me, it doesn't work, I tried it. Number two, another conflict that you have, that why you cannot cross, there is the area that I'm talking about from Taba to Eilat, 3 minutes. It's not that hard to cross. But there is two military boats. One is Egyptian military boat and one is Israeli military boat. You try to cross the system in the Middle East, they will shoot you first and they will ask you later. So there is two military boats. Each boat have between 4 and 5 soldiers, and they are there to protect the border. You try to cross, they will shoot you. So how you cross? I went and I stole a jet ski. Sea-Doo, you know the jet ski, the water motorcycle. I went and I stole jet ski. Some of you would tell me, but you are reverend, you are a man of God, how could you steal a jet ski? I stole a jet ski, sue me. I don't care. That's the problem when you reach my age, I don't care. Seriously. And it's not hard to steal a jet ski, because the only thing that you have to do is the under... No, I'm not telling you. Some of you are like, oh, finally, I will know how. No. I stole a jet ski and I waited until 5:30 p.m. 5:30 p.m., which is mean that the sun is behind you, which is mean anybody is looking at you will be blinded for 20 seconds, which is enough time to get in depth in the water. I waited until 5:30. I put the motorcycle. It's still how you cross. The two boats standing like this, you try to cross from here, they will shoot you. You try to cross from here, they will shoot you. There is only one point you can cross and they cannot shoot you. It's between them. Because if they try to shoot you while you are crossing between them, they will shoot each other. It's called crossfire. I put the jet ski, I cross between them. That's when the Egyptians and the Israelis aimed at me. But that's also when they realized that they are aiming at each other. And the last thing that the Egyptians or the Israelis won't start a new war in the Middle East because a guy crossing in a jet ski. So by the time they changed the position of the boats, if you went again to Taba and Eilat today, the boats standing apart from each other. The reason of this is because of me. I'm not joking, it's a true story. They changed the whole security system in the border because they discovered that this was a mistake. By the time they changed the position of their boat, I already reached Princess Hotel. That's when I surrendered to the Israeli authority. And I asked to be a refugee. Now, according to the Camp David peace agreement between the Egyptians and the Israelis, they cannot accept refugees from each other. So the Israelis was under heavy pressure to surrender me back again to Egypt, while United Nations and Amnesty International was requesting, she's going to the washroom, don't look at her. She said, oh, quickly, we're all looking. I'm joking, sorry. You can see how she's not comfortable, and she's like, oh my, he's talking about me, please, no, God, not me, not me. Let's wait until she comes back and we do it again. Sorry. So, United Nations and Amnesty International requested from the Israelis to keep me until they investigate my story now, because there is a lot of pressure from the Egyptians. The Israelis have to keep me in prison until United Nations take a final decision about my case. I stayed in the Israeli prison in isolation because they was worried that any of the Muslim prisoners will try to kill me, so they put me in isolation for 1 year, 3 months, 15 days, 12 hours, 24 minutes. You count when you are innocent, man. During this time, I learned the Hebrew language. And before I was released from the prison, two Israeli guards and one Israeli criminal came to the Lord before I leave this prison. You're really not very clapping crowd, aren't you? Because even, like, it's have to take one of you, like, and after that, everybody think about it. Shall we clap? No clap? United Nations recognized me, Kofi Annan at the time, he was the General Secretary of United Nations, he recognized me as a political refugee. I was the first political refugee came out of Egypt in the last 60 years of the history of United Nations. So it was really amazing. Even the Israelis were surprised. During this time, the Israeli, of course, after the decision of United Nations, they released me. In Jerusalem, and I lived in Jerusalem for another year and a half. During this time, the United Nations was trying to find countries to accept me. Sometimes it takes years to find one country to accept you. In less than a year, three countries accepted me, was Australia, Denmark, and Canada. I prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said, Canada. The Lord forget to tell me it's 20 below zero in the winter. We can make joke and fun as we wish about how cold is Canada, how this, how that. You have to understand you live in the greatest nation in the world, and that's the truth. Part of my punishment that the Egyptian government dropped my citizenship. So I lost, I used to travel with a UN passport written on it, stateless, a man without land. In my 20s, from age of 22 to 28, I was a man without a land. I have no citizenship. 8 years ago, I stood in front of a Canadian judge, and I swear the oath, and I'm standing in front of you right now as a very proud Canadian citizen. Funny story though, the Canadian judge, when he looked at me, he told me, son, what the first thing you want to do as a Canadian? I told him, Your Honor, I want to drink beer, watch hockey, and complain about the weather. He told me, son, you're a true Canadian. I told him, thank you, Your Honor, I appreciate that. Where is your wife, man? Why didn't she come back? She's scared. I'm waiting for him, man. I finished my testimony. After I came back here 13 years ago, I started one, 10 years ago, I started One Free World International for Human Rights. It's a human rights organization. We are a group of lawyers that were here fighting for the freedom of religion around the world. In 10 years, we was able to have branches in 28 different countries, as you saw in the video, from Afghanistan to Pakistan to Iraq to Syria. Many of the things in the video, of course, many of the operation, of course, we cannot share with you. Just came back from Iraq and Syria two months ago. Part of our operation that we are risking the Yazidi girls and the Christian girls that have been kidnapped by ISIS is estimated by more than 7,000 girls under ISIS territory. Some of them get raped up to 20 times a day. And they sell them like a meat market. Their prices will be between $2,000 to $4,000. Our organization, by the grace of God, was the only organization that was able to go to ISIS territory, and we was able to free directly or indirectly 500 girls by the grace of God. I get shot at 7 times in the last 5 years, which can explain to you why I'm still a single man, because simply to have a family in this atmosphere is very dangerous. So if you have a wife or children, this can complicate things. But if you are single, I don't care. If I would get shot and I get killed and I went to heaven, I hope that this will happen before I pay my American Express. That's my only wishes. I just like to take them with me. That's all. I finished my testimony. Would you mind that I share with you 5 more minutes? I need to discuss with you. God bless you. God bless you. I love he's talking and he's not the pastor, but like I love that. I took more than 20. I think your pastor will never invite me here again. But anyway, there are 3 more points I need to discuss with you before you leave this wonderful place. Number one, I'm not here because I hate Egypt. It's the opposite. I love my back home. I love my roots, my ground. If I didn't love my roots, I would never love Canada. Because if you don't love your roots, you will not love your fruits. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm here because I love Egypt. I did what I did because I love Egypt. Because when you love somebody, when you love something, you try to discipline. You try to fix, you try to correct. That's a sign of love. They can kick me out of my land, but they cannot kick my land out of me. Do you hear me? This is number one. Number two, I'm not here because I hate Muslims. And this is very important. This is something that you need to understand. If you left this church with any hatred in your heart toward the Muslim people, then we failed. I forgive the Muslim people. I forgive even officer number 27. You know why? Because I refuse to be in the prison of revenge. The Lord said, love your enemy, bless who will curse you. He didn't only say it, he proved it on the cross when he said, forgive them, Father, for they don't know what they are doing. He was wise enough to understand that there is no society, there is no community can live an eye by an eye, tooth by a tooth, or the whole society will end blind and toothless. That's true. Not hate anybody. The key to unlock the gates of persecution is forgiveness and victory in Jesus' name. Point number 3 and the last. We're waiting for you. Come on. Yep. We're waiting. I was actually asking about you, by the way, just if, when you left, I was asking about you. She missed this last part. We have to start from the beginning. So, I only tease the people that I like. That's why I never tease your pastor. So I need to know. Point number three and the last. We have to understand that there is one persecuted Christian every 3 minutes worldwide. Just last year, over 165,000 Christians was killed for their faith. There's 200 to 300 million persecuted Christians worldwide. Worse than any Holocaust that the people had ever known. And our churches doesn't even know about it. They completely left behind. They get tortured, they get killed. Their women get raped. The conscience of the world seems that ignore them completely as if they are not exist. Giving up is not part of my dictionary or belief. What we can do to help the persecuted Christians? Number one, prayers. Now, I know how many of you, let's start with that, how many of you pray for the persecuted church every day? Put your hands up. Every day. Four people. I know why you don't pray for the persecuted Christians. There is persecution every day, so I'm talking about prayers every day. I know why you don't pray for the persecuted church every day. Maybe you didn't know. But now you do. See, the problem of knowledge, or that once you know, you become part of the problem or the heart of the solution. There is no third option. You know already. If you didn't know, you have your own excuse, but now you lost that excuse. Maybe you didn't know, but now you do. Maybe you just don't have time to pray every day for the persecuted church. You are a busy person. How many of you drink tea or coffee every day? Put your hands up. How many of you, how long it takes from you to drink your cup of coffee or your cup of tea? Put a number. How long it takes from you to drink it? This is only white people will do that. Just FYI. Sorry, I'm not politically correct, obviously. The Lord is coming back soon. What's wrong? No, it's 15 minutes. It's too long. Let's say 5 minutes. Somebody is 10 minutes. What's wrong with you? Anyway, let's say 5 minutes. I think that's the number that we all some degree. It takes you 5 minutes every day out of your life. That's if you are drinking just one cup in the morning. It takes you 5 minutes. You waste 5 minutes of your life every single day drinking your silly cup of coffee or tea. So, it takes 2 minutes to pray for the persecuted church every day. Less than 2 minutes. So here is the agreement that I will do with you. Every morning when you are holding in your hot cup of tea or hot cup of coffee, and the heat is touching the tip of your finger and you are feeling it in your nerve system, you will remember the persecuted Christians under heat, under persecution, and you will take just 1 minute to pray for them. Say, Lord, just be with them today. Take them from the shadow of life, from the shadow of death to the shadow of life. May they never be alone in this battle. They will stand strong in the midst of the storm. And they will forgive their persecutors and give them grace. Now, on the table behind you, that's my table behind you, that you found our flyers, but part of our flyers as well, if there is something called the 7 prayer points for the persecuted Christians. Now, if you take one and you just put it in your fridge, every day you found 7 prayer points that the most needed areas for the persecuted Christians. Now, if you didn't take it and you didn't put it in the fridge, you don't have to read all 7 points. You can just pray from your heart. But if you want things to help you to know the most needed areas, this will be the 7 prayer points on the table for the persecuted church. It's very important. There is a limited numbers, but I think the church willing to just make a photocopy and just give you more if you lost it. As well, on the table, you found books and DVDs. It's called Freedom Fighter. It's a movie and a book that was written about the work that we did. We won 4 awards internationally about it. Now, the books and the DVDs is $20 each. Now, here is the system in One Free World International, just for you to know. If you can give the money, that's great. But if you need the book and the DVD and you don't have the money, just take it and go. Because the most important that the message goes out, not the money. Do you understand what I'm saying? So many people, and I can see many ministries do that, you have to pay the money, and if you didn't pay the money, you will not get the message. I don't know since when the church becomes supermarket. But if you have it, perfect. If you don't have it, just take it and go home. Don't worry about money. Are you with me? What else we can do to help the persecuted Christians? The Bible said faith without action is... In the same table, you found signing sheets. So the sign sheets, if you put your name and your email address, you will receive something from us. It's called Action Alert. What is Action Alert? It's basically that when they arrest one of the persecuted Christians worldwide, you receive their names, their stories, and will ask from you to pray for them and or take an action. How the action is to send an email to your member of parliament, send an email to the prime minister, to send an email or a letter to the embassy of this country that arrested this brother in the Lord or sister in the Lord. Now, here is the secret that you need to know. We took over 600 cases by the grace of God. We never lost one. By the grace of God. Not by our power, but by His might. By the Spirit of the living God. We worked with the federal government, and our organization led more than 30 or 40,000 Christians from Iraq and Syria to come here to Canada. By the grace of God. And they integrate wonderfully in the society because they are Christians. Amen. I know that nobody wants to say it because it's not politically correct. They can kiss my neck. I keep forgetting I'm in a church. If you sign, you receive this action alert from us. And the point of the action alert, that all of you will send the same email, not the same email, like send an email or letters in the same time, what creates a school international pressure on this government in order to release this person. And in order for us to go inside and after that rescue them, to bring them here or to take them to another country around the world. Here is the tricky part. Can I share with you a story, a secret? Most of you, after I finish, you will go and you will sign. Why? Because you've just been touched by the story. So you are a little bit emotional. A week later, when you receive our action alert saying, hey, there is a brother or sister, they need help, pray and or take an action. You say, oh, I forgot about this brown guy. It was a long time ago. And you will click delete on the email. So here is my request to you. I don't want 5,000 people to sign and never take an action. I want 5 to sign and take an action and or pray. Some people don't want to take action, but will pray for them. Prayers also is very valuable. So here is my request to you. If you are unsure, Do not put your name, do not put your email. This is my sheets, that's not your sheets. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's my organization, man. That's not yours. Do not sign if you are not sure. Don't worry about the brown guy, he will survive. So don't sign out of obligation of guilt or shame or oh, we have to do something. I don't need that. I need somebody like a lion standing with me in the front line fighting for these people. I don't need your tears, really. Do you understand what I'm saying? Finally, now what I will be saying next, that's the final thought. And what I will be saying next will be more important than anything else I said. So if you don't want to remember anything I said, please remember this last sentence. The persecuted Christians is dying, but they're still smiling. They are in very deep, dark night, but they still have the candle of the living God. Our enemy have very strong army, it's true. Our enemy have very strong weapon, it's true. But we have the Lord Almighty, and this is a fact. Are you listening? After every night, there is new morning carrying new day. After every storm, there is sunshine. And after every persecution, there is victory in Jesus' name. One thing you need to know. One thing you need to know. They can always kill the believers. But they cannot kill the belief of our hearts. They can always kill the dreamer. But no one can kill the dream. Thank you and God bless you. Thank you for having me.
Do you understand why I asked them to come back or to come for the first time? So I encourage you to do one of the things that Reverend Majid has encouraged us to do and to take this seriously. I'm going to ask the ushers to come forward and we're going to take them an offering while I close and close in prayer. You're going to have to multitask. Hopefully that's okay. If you want to make checks out there to One Free World International, you can give cash. It does make a difference. And One Free World International gets to places others don't. And if you're looking for a charitable receipt, they can't give you one because they don't work that way. They can't go and do what they need to do if they submit to some of the rules of the Canadian government for charity. So we're asking you to do that tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock. We're going to talk about how we could rescue a persecuted Christian family. So you guys can start passing the plates. I encourage you to pick up a book or a DVD. This isn't a cash grab or he's not looking to sell anything. But that same passion that's in his heart, my prayer would be in mine and yours. We have a blessing. When we prayed in the office this morning, we said, you know, there's no reason that we're born here in the fact that we're better than someone else. We happen to be placed here. God knows. But we have a responsibility and an opportunity to help others who don't have the same opportunity we do. And so God had planned that Reverend Majid would be here today and that you would hear it. And I pray you take it seriously and take the prayer items home and sign up for the emails. And get in contact with that. Ask the Lord if there's something more he can do through you and your family to help others. I know we ask for lots of things and funding, all sorts of things. But this is something that often doesn't get talked about, and our world doesn't care. They don't care. But we can. Father, thanks so much that we can be here this morning. God, I pray that we wouldn't leave without having some action. Father, even though we're emotionally stirred, I pray that through your Holy Spirit,